Hey folks, this is Dr. William Curtis with the WFO Life Podcast. We're going to do something a little different today, which is a kind of a montage of our recent coaching series. We had three great interviews with coaches recently, Sebastian Giraldo, Coach Lee Crisp, and also Sammy Giraldo, all excellent and experienced coaches in their own right. There were so many pearls for coaches, athletes, and leaders within those podcasts. We thought it would be fun to kind of put a montage of some of the best points made during those episodes. So, you know, again, something new, something we're trying. I'm going to mix those together and I'll try to give a little intro as we go through some of these points. I hope you enjoy this episode and we look forward to hearing your feedback.
Welcome to the WFO Life Podcast. Buckle up for interviews, insights, and practical discussions, and the occasional intellectual oddity, all designed to help you master self, master craft, and accomplish any life mission.
Next up is Coach Sebastian Giraldo. Tons of tips during his multiple interviews with the WFO Life Podcast. Here's some of our favorites.
When you critique people, when you are trying to have them reflect or improve, you're actually, in the long run, you're going to gain their trust if they see that they're actually improving and getting better. So the more they see those processes of, hey, this is actually helping me, the more you're going to be able to push in the long run. We know very well, though, that people respond better and perform better if they are happy and positive. Big problem that I see in a lot of environments, and it's not just sport environments, a lot of work environments, is the people are not happy. When people are not happy, their motivation drops tremendously. When their motivation drops tremendously, their performance drops. So it's a key that I talk about with coaches, that I educate with my players, is I want them to be happy, because I know if they're happy, they're going to try to give me everything they have, not only to me, to the team, but for themselves. So I make it a key, and Bill, you know this very well as part of our environments, but there's a lot of things that we do to make sure they're having a good time, even at the professional level. And when you have those players, especially in our style, they play a certain way. They're more creative. They're more willing to voice their concerns, to voice the things that they like, the things that they don't like. So I think it's very important that if you're trying to get the best out of people, you've got to make sure that they're happy. They're happy overall with what's happening in the environment.
Next up is Coach Lee Crisp. Numerous coaching pearls in his interview. Here's a little snippet.
My captains, I didn't allow them to be the kings. They were the ones that had to carry the balls. They were the ones that had to clean up the field. They're the ones that had to clean the locker room and the bus. They served the other kids. It wasn't a you have arrived. It was you have more responsibility than anyone else. So
here's another from Coach Sebastian Giraldo.
That segue for me is to like what we're talking about culture in general, but a lot of the questions I get from parents specifically is when they're trying to choose a location or a sport environment for their kids is, what should I be looking for in a high performance culture? And one of the things that I tell them that they should recognize immediately is, how is everyone treating each other, from coach to the players, to the manager, to some environments, to the water boy, to the doctors, to anyone that is in that environment, how is everyone treating each other? And that usually is a very, very good sign of how well that people perform in that culture overall. And the reality is, I've seen a lot of winning teams that players aren't happy and aren't necessarily treated well. But what I've learned very well is that doesn't last over the long term. You might have success for 1 or 2 years, but you're not going to be able to sustain that success unless the people in your environment respect each other. Like you said, the coach or leader or everybody is humble and people consistently do what they talk about. Because what I see a lot is, and a lot of coaches, they know the buzzwords, they know, but when it comes to behavior every single day, it's not what they're saying. And that's really the key of, do you have a high performance environment? Is what you're saying matching up with what is actually happening every single day?
Next up is Sammy Giraldo, another excellent and highly educated coach and mentor. Here's some of his best work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mentioned earlier that book, The Culture Code, and you mentioned the Zappos founder, and that was one of the companies they looked at. They looked at Navy SEAL Team 6. They actually looked at the Spurs. So that's a really cool book. But the three main kind of themes, I think we've touched on two of the three. The first one is, you know, building safety in your culture to make everyone feel comfortable, you know, working together. Obviously establishing a purpose through a common goal. You talked about that. But one of the ones we haven't really talked about exactly is other piece of this culture code is sharing vulnerability to show that no one needs to be perfect. So is that something that, you know, you've built into the process or seen being a coach where it is helpful to, you know, treat people's mistakes the right way or maybe reveal yourself. So how's that?
Absolutely, Chris. So look, the vulnerability aspect is probably one of the pillars of what I described earlier as the modern coach or the profile of a modern coach. I would say at every single coaching education course that I teach, vulnerability, making yourself vulnerable as an instructor or as a coach participant is the number one thing that we try to get across. So with our athletes, it's really no different, right? We teach about a holistic player-centered approach. Again, that's really the modern direction. I'm talking about anywhere in the world, even at the highest professional Premier League level, right? Mm-hmm. So when you look at it like that, and when you take yourself as a coach away from the center of attention, and it's all about your players, it makes things much easier, right? So I look at your question and I ask myself, if I'm truly, as a coach, have created a player-centered environment, right? That means I'm always putting the needs of my athletes above mine. And one of those is understanding that vulnerabilities, there's a lot of different ways, right? It extends from creating an environment where people feel safe about sharing their opinions, all the way to creating an environment where we accept people's differences, right? I mean, I think that's one of those things that is forefront. If we all turn on the TV, we're seeing that on TV every single day. So creating that safe environment by, I'm going to go back to this first of all, listening. It's not about me going in there and saying, you know, guys, these are the rules, it's safe in here. No, it's about showing what's safe, right? So me being the first that is willing to share a crazy story, right? What did I do for the break? Or me being the first, I'll share a very simple one. Me being the first to wear a crazy sweater or something that may have not been accepted in the past. Doing a team event with girls' team, for instance, and going to a mani-pedi party. And as a male coach, allowing my nails to be painted, right? So this is something that if it was the 1970s, I probably wouldn't have my job the next day, right?
But
this is, this is what the modern coach is. And if I'm willing to put myself out there and be vulnerable, then it immediately creates an environment where I don't have to preach vulnerability and say that this is safe. It's automatically created, and the players understand that it truly is a fully safe environment where all vulnerabilities are accepted.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how much that is counterintuitive in a lot of cultures, though, where, you know, everybody wants to show, you know, no weaknesses, right? It's like, it makes such a falsehood because everybody knows that you're, you know, it's like the emperor has no clothes. So you create a culture where nobody wants to report, you know, on any shortcomings. And before you know it, it's falling down like a house of cards. And so it's amazing how that showing vulnerability, taking ownership, creates a culture really of like continuous, you know, self-improvement, right? Because you're more self-aware. You're like, I screwed that one up, coach. You know, I need to. And so I think that's just such a huge part that I'm glad in the modern coaching. And I think the modern, you know, I know the modern military and the modern business culture has finally started to see that a lot of these ultimate failures that look like successes, you know, on paper, were a lot of this. Nobody wanted to admit it Enron or people that work for Bernie Madoff. I'm sure you know, you can look at all these examples that, like, if somebody would just been like, hey, we got to cut the cord on this, you know, jackassery here, because, you know, this is not right. So anyway.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
So send me here's another from Coach Sebastian Giraldo.
What I've noticed is that, you know, if you get too involved, it's too serious in that environment, that learning environment. And, you know, sometimes I've noticed that before a training session, you know, everybody gets there, or maybe we're juggling the ball around, or we're kind of horse playing a little bit. It's all functional stuff. You know, we're juggling the ball and we're making a game out of it, just like you would if you were playing out on the street somewhere. And sometimes that's worth spending more time on. It's worth spending more time because it builds the enjoyment and the love of that sport or the game that's happening. And this could be, I mean, this could be across the board in any sport, really, that time of just play and tossing the ball around. If you're like a baseball player, we're just hanging out and, you know, throwing the ball around. I think weaving that into the coaching plan or into the environment where it's like, it's okay for us to let things down a little bit and not be in the strict, I'm the teacher, you're the student role, and now it's time to learn and you do as I say. It's actually that looser, it's a fun environment and we play together. That's something I know you and I have done with our players over the years, is just sometimes we just jump in and play with them. Not so that we can dominate them or something, but so that we can, you know, they see us as players too. We're all here to enjoy the game.
You hit the key word, and there's a lot of research on this, but play theory, the idea that humans, we think often that kids learn through play or through game-based approach, adults do as well. And when people play, and it can be video games or it can be, you know, the Sunday league or whatever, there's a lot of learning that happens, both in terms of skills, in terms of mental processes, but there's a lot of socialization learning and different things that happen. So the idea of play integrated to work environments, into high performance sport environments, for me is a key part of our philosophy of what we do, but I think it's missing in a lot of environments. And if you add that play factor, you go back to why people started playing sport. It's because it was fun, and you need to have that throughout. If you have that idea of play, of why people play, of why they play sport, and you need to have it integrated into your philosophy, you're going to see that people are happier and they perform better overall.
Listen to another from Coach Lee Crisp.
When you blame others for something that went wrong, you have given the power away of actually adapting your own whatever change that needs to occur to get better. So when you blame the officials in a game, well, you can't fix the officials. So you've given them all the power. There's nothing you can do. That's a victim mentality, and it's very unproductive when it comes to athletics, and I think in life in general, it's a crippling thing. So
that may be our bumper for this episode, because that's like one of the wisest things I've ever heard. I have had so many situations where parents, players, coaches, they're so wrapped up in what the referee is doing and all these external events, and the reality is they're not handling their own business. They're not controlling the things they can control. You know, they're so worried about all the external stuff, and it's not fair and all those kind of things. I think that's probably that one pearl right there was worth interviewing you for sure, because I mean, it's true. And that's, and the funny thing is, like, we say these things, and I can tell the three of us are having this conversation and it all makes sense to us. We were kind of raised in a, you know, same time frame, kind of probably similar backgrounds, and all of that. I can certainly tell you, coming out of, you know, Cal Allen High School and play, you know, where I grew up, I can tell you that's exactly how I was raised. You better take care of your own business. And but there's so many people that you would say something like that to, and because I've coached them, and you say something like that to, and they look at you with like blank stare. They have no idea. That's not right. I mean, that referee, and it's all about that. And they'll talk about it. And that kind of stuff, that hit a nerve with me, because it's like that is a pet peeve of mine. That you know, we talk a lot about Stoic philosophy and things like that on this podcast. And Stoicism basically is a philosophy that says you should deal with things as best you can. You don't get to choose whether it's good or bad what happens to you, but you do get a choice about how you respond to it.
And another from Coach Sammy Giraldo.
And when, let's say, a coach is trying to establish a successful program,
what you did is, you know, these are the steps I'm thinking through that happened. You said, what are our values? What do we value? Period. This is us. This is who we are. This is what we stand for, and positive values. Then what happened is those are taught to the people that you start training with, to your program, if you will, to your players. But then ultimately, over time, you have to continue to reflect on it. And what I was just thinking about is as time goes on, and I know I saw this with GEF when it was there with you guys, you start to attract, because of the success, you start to attract more and more, let's call it talented players, that sometimes the whole fit isn't there.
Yeah.
Okay. And I know I've seen this working with the USL program that you were involved with as well. You know, yeah. Sometimes you get players that come in that have all the skill, they have all the talent, but they don't have the value and they are not a good fit. And it's tempting as a coach to say, yeah, I'll overlook that because they're going to do X on the field.
Yep.
But then what happens is every time you do that, you degrade the base. And that's one point. I wanted to hit yeah. this hard because this is one of the points. Is we have a series of coaches we're going to interview, and a few of the ones I'm hoping to have on, like yourself, have very extensive coaching backgrounds, 30 years plus with winning programs and things like that.
Yeah.
And it's not always just about winning, but I know that some of those coaches have very strong culture. They have very strong value that are at the base. That's yeah. It's like, this is unacceptable if you're outside of this area.
It's Bill, I think you said something really important. I think we all know who John Wooden is, but mm-hmm. I was actually watching Bill Walton, who most people know who Bill Walton is as well. He was right. doing commentary, and he was talking about his experience at UCLA just as a student, and they were asking him about who his worst professor was, right? And his answer was, I didn't have any terrible professors because they were all students of John Wooden, right? And that got me thinking. I'm like, oh, man, he's right. He's like John Wooden, and we've kind of moved away from it, but he was so popular, and he was such a central figure on that campus and created this such an amazing culture that all these people started studying under him and really started applying those same philosophies. So they created a microculture at UCLA where it was really all these amazing leaders, mentors, and instructors, right?
Right.
And then going to your point, Bill, right? If you – well, I'll put it this way. I'm going to be very interested in hearing these coaches that you guys bring in, because in soccer in particular, I mean, we can all watch a game. We could all turn on a Premier League game today. And, you know, these coaches have to make these decisions. We're only seeing what's happening on TV. But like you said, some of these players don't meet the values, right? What effect does a player that doesn't meet the values of the standards of the club or of the entity, what negativity does that actually bring? And as fans, the reality is we don't always get to see that because we're only seeing it on TV. It really takes an in-depth reflection or investigation of the dynamics, right? The interpersonal dynamics of a company or of a club, which you have seen at the USL level, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
How detrimental it can be when you have this amazing athlete, but they just simply don't bring the qualities that entity or that team is really looking for. And personally, Bill and Chris, this is, and again, every coach, every person is going to have a different philosophy, but this is really kind of one of those things that I've really changed that. And I've noticed if you're true yeah. to those values, that is always going to be the most important thing. And you will find that player eventually that has that similar skill, but more importantly, meets the other criteria that will make the journey for everybody much more enjoyable and much more successful.
Yeah, you think about it, Sammy, from even we've been talking about soccer as a basis for our conversation, but you think about, you know, the high visibility, I guess more American sports, American football and basketball. And you look at some of the dynasties and you kind of have that perfect synergy of coach and culture. And then you still have to have a star player in a lot of cases to make it work. And sometimes if you have that you know, key player coach combination with the culture, you can put all different types of role players. I mean, think about the New England Patriots, right? I mean, Belichick and Brady, I mean, they won with wide receivers that nobody could even name again. You know, absolutely. I mean, it was like a strong, it was like discipline, do your job, good defense, smart quarterback, you know, stuff like that. But then you think about the Spurs. I mean, you had Popovich, setting the culture and the tone. Good ownership to let him do his thing. And then, you know, think about like the twin towers of, you know, quiet leaders, David Robinson and Tim Duncan, you know, leading by example. You know, those guys, you know, weren't, you know, grabbing people by the jersey, but they're just like worked hard, very proficient, you know, shut up and play. So I think that, you know, everything you're saying, I mean, has played out in all different types of sports. I mean, you mentioned John Wooden.
Absolutely.
You look at Coach K from Duke. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people that have done it, but it is more on the side of culture and, you know, the type of people. And then you see, I mean, there's obviously be flashes in the pan, right? You'll see, you know, a rented championship team. You know, the recruit, I think Kentucky did it 1 year. I mean, they have a pretty good program in basketball, but they got, you know, recruited five kids that were all in the NBA the next year. And then, you know, they were barely in the top 25, you know, in a shell of themselves. So it's the ones that, you know, anyway, we could go on for hours, but I think it's proven empirically. So.
No, it's Chris, I'm a sports fanatic, first of all. Everything that you've talked about, man, I've read in depth about. So I just want to make a real quick comment about the John Calipari, because college basketball in particular is one of my favorite sports, and following
awesome.
Michigan State, obviously. But yeah, so when John Calipari, you know, he's a great coach. He's obviously a great, like, coach. He motivates players, but it's a perfect example of a coach that made a decision about what type of culture he wants. And you said it perfectly. He didn't mince words. He went to Kentucky and he told the students, he told the student athletes, I'm going to bring the best athletes here. Right. And I'm going to guarantee that you guys will go on to the NBA next year and you guys are going to be millionaires. Right.
Yeah.
And what's the result of that? The result is they were amazing. Yes, you know, they won championships. They whooped Michigan State, unfortunately. But did the culture last? And the sad reality is no. I think it's an unsustainable thing, because there are multiple ways to win, and especially at the youth level. But if you really want to set up a company, a sports entity for success, it's about the people. It's about having a common vision. And sports is absolutely no different than that. And I think it's often overlooked.
Listen to another from Coach Lee Crisp.
And there's a lot of families that don't have a coach or a person in their lives that will do that for them. How much do you see that you're, you know, at your role, how much of that do you see as a coach or as a mentor to people that might not have that in their lives? Do you feel that, or does that seem like it's less important than I'm making it?
No, I think that is the ultimate goal of what we're doing. I mean, I work at a high school. You know, there's very few of these kids that are going to go on to do this professionally or
right.
anything else. But the experience of working towards a goal and overcoming adversity and improving yourself and how to think and how to prepare and those are all the things that's of utmost importance, because like I said, I mean, we might have one or two guys every year that are going to go play at the next level. Very few that are going to make a career out of it. And so if I can help them to be responsible, be willing to work, sacrifice things now so that you can have better things later, all the stuff that I would teach my own kid, that's really how I gauge whether or not it's worth teaching. Would I want my son to hear this or be a part of this program?
Right.
That's really our job. It's more, you know, anyone can get up there and draw X's and O's, and it's, you got to understand who your kids are, what they can do, but you also got to believe in them and help them to become better than they are, and not just in athletics, but as a person.
And another from Coach Sammy Giraldo.
So that was my first kind of jump into the professional realms, and it just kind of was a snowball effect. It obviously motivated me a lot to have success, but
I just kind of said, I'm going to keep on doing this. I'm going to keep on taking the courses, and always with the attitude to go learn, open-minded, but try to be the best. And I think it's an important thing. I always get asked this question, how did you do this? Well, go prove yourself. Don't just go to a course and be a spectator. Be an active participant and get involved.
Yeah. Well, that's a life lesson that everyone needs to know. You know, I was just talking to my middle daughter the other day about the idea that whatever it is you're doing, do it the best you can. And if you're going to, you know, she's, you know, had an art competition that she was something she was working on. She's and said, you know, you need to be the best at what you can do. And we had a conversation related to soccer that's like, you know, she's a pretty good soccer player, and she steps on the game, and you know, maybe it's a lesser team. You know, you have to play at the level you're capable, and don't play down to a different level when it's below your capability. Always, even if you have to push yourself when no one else is doing so, push yourself to that next level. That's powerful, and it's a reason for success that you've had at the, to this point.
Yeah, well, I was gonna say one thing that struck me too about what you said, Sammy. You know, some things that I've learned being around great people and trying to soak up what I can. And one of the things you said about, you know, how you participated in that course is something we talk about a lot on the podcast, like, you know, being mindful and being deliberate going into something that you know is important to you. And when it comes to listening and absorbing things from other people, you know, recently I was like a little retreat with a, you know, for leadership with a bunch of incredible folks. And the main facilitator said something that reminded me of what you were saying. He said, you know, are you listening to people in order to be able to respond to them when it's your turn? Or are you listening to actually understand what they're saying? Because in a lot of cases, especially when we're in a competitive environment, or, you know, in your case, I can imagine, you know, you're, you know, kind of going through a program to, you know, become an elite coach. It's like you're listening, but you're listening to maybe respond if you're questioned or, you know, something like that. So, you know, when he said that, there's so many applications, including the one you mentioned. It's like, are you actually listening to learn and absorb and soak up what you can from this experience? Or are you just trying to not look stupid, for lack of a better way to say it, right? Are you just listening to be like, oh, I got to remember that? Or are you trying to actually absorb it, you know, and just be quiet and listen and learn, you know, versus like, I'm going to be, you know, the one popping up with answers, or, you know, be ready if I'm tested. But yeah, I mean, I think the way we even go into listening can be important in those settings. So I'm glad you said that.
Yeah. No, it's cool to hear just the perspective of different environments, but also how much they have in common. And I just want to share that because I think it's a lesson in sports in general. One thing I really want people to reflect on is that sports, we tend to kind of put on a pedestal sometimes that it's this amazing thing that only a few people get to do at the highest level, which is true. But it's not something that just happens by chance, whether it's on the coaching side or whether it's on the athlete side. There's a lot that goes into it from anybody that reaches the highest level. And I think it's important to give the opportunities, support that, but also, like you said, to understand that it's a very deep process to get to this point. And a lot of it has to do with simply the willingness and the desire to listen and learn, and sometimes take a step back yourself so that you can really improve yourself.
Here's another from Coach Sebastian Giraldo.
If I were a coach, I would want to understand that principle works better. And I can tell you from personal experience, both coaching and watching high-level coaches such as yourself work with players, focusing on individual players matters the most. It matters more than the team dynamic and everything else. If you're developing players and giving them your best, they know you're there for them. They'll play their hearts out for you. They'll work hard off the field, and they'll do the little things that make them become, you know, championship caliber athletes.
Yeah, and part of that rationale of focusing on the individual in what I do is I don't necessarily know what their future looks like. So we know through research that most of these players are not going to play professional soccer. So the fact that we focus on them being better people overall and learning how to develop good habits for high performance in the end is so they can be effective in whatever career they choose, not necessarily soccer. We're lucky that we've had players now that are being successful at the professional level, but I would say the focus on the individual is because in the end, we don't know what they're going to do. The likelihood is not that they're going to be a professional soccer player in the long run.
Listen to another from Coach Lee Crisp.
Do you find that you try to coach everyone the same, or are there certain cases where you kind of have to adapt your style to connect with a certain player, or in some cases, maybe even their family?
I don't think you can ever coach any two kids the same. You know which ones you can get more out of if you push them harder. You can some of them you have to sort of coax things out of them. There's some kids that will respond to a nice tail ripping, and then some of them, if you do that, you're just going to they're going to get their back up and they're not going to listen to anything you have to say. So it's all about relationships. That's what this job is, and understanding who they are, respecting who they are, and then also understanding where they're coming from. You know, you can get into a kid about being late, but you know, you find out that he's not living at home. He's living with his buddies or with his girlfriend or something like that. And that's when you take some time to figure those things out, you can be much more effective as a coach and as a mentor.
Yeah, it's funny. It reminded me, we recently interviewed a Navy SEAL that's kind of a life coach, and you know, he's like trained dogs and all kinds of stuff. And he was comparing, you know, training dogs to training kids or training people. He said, you know, like I have a Rhodesian Ridgeback, and then he trains, you know, typical military dogs like Belgian Malinois and German Shepherds. And, you know, a lot of these really smart, capable dogs, if you're too harsh on them, they'll just turn you off. You know, I mean, they'll just like, I'm not going to listen to you, you know, and it's not out of fear or anything else. It's just like, you know, I don't need this. If like you mentioned earlier, trust, and people are the same way. And sometimes some of the best of us are like that. You know, like you mentioned, I mean, there's certain kids that, you know, take it well and will really, you know, improve their performance by a good butt chewing. But other ones are just like, you know, I don't need this crap from you. But if you build that trust, you know, I think sometimes, you know, you can go both ways. So that's an important point, I think, not only for coaching, but just for, you know, leading people in life and really just leading people in your own family. So that's awesome.